Live from State Street in the heart of Chicago, you are listening to the new home of the Chicago Bears, ESPN Chicago. And this is Carmen and Yurko, WMVP, WSHE, HD2, Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
All right, well, we'll take some more of your Bears calls in a little bit. We'll also do the lunch rush this hour. Carmen and Yurko, Crosstalk with Waddle and Sylvie at 2:35. Watch us on YouTube today and every day live in our State Street studios with fresh, clean windows. Make sure you like and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Just search at Carmen and Yurko on the YouTube app or go to youtube.com/@Carmen and Yurko and subscribe and get all the fun stuff. You can watch live. You can get interactive there with us. We get out to the CarX Tire and Auto guest hotline right now and say hello to Courtney Cronin. She's got a great article up on the front page of ESPN.com. Hey, Courtney, how are you?
I'm great, guys. How are you doing?
We're doing well. Are you glad the draft's over?
Yeah. There's a lot of lead-up time into it, and last week feels like a blur. I was in Hallis Hall from Tuesday through Saturday, and everything that led into the moment that we all knew was coming, there was just so much I had to kind of like pause for a minute and think back to March 16th when all of this really became real, when they traded Justin Fields. And from that point, just over a month until the time that they drafted Caleb Williams, and realizing everything that happened in between, reworking the roster and free agency, adding the draft picks, adding Caleb Williams in there too. And, you know, the amount of work that the Bears put in to get here, you don't realize it considering it was in such a short amount of time, but a lot happened in about 5 weeks that changed the direction of this franchise.
Just when we thought we knew everything about Caleb Williams, because the way he's been covered the last couple of years, you uncovered a few other things. But it really speaks to just, like, I think some of the things we knew, it was just different examples of it, Courtney, that he really does seem like a hard, diligent, serious worker.
Yeah, and it's so rare, I think, when it's actually, it has been rare, but it's probably becoming more of the norm, where a guy who's 10 or, you know, a kid who's 10 or 12 years old, 10 or 11 years old, like Caleb was, when he told us that was the point of his life where he started to tell his parents, I want to be a professional football player. I want to do this for real. And then the commitment and the resources poured into somebody to make their dream come true. Today's athlete, you're starting to see more of those guys versus when you or I were growing up. And like, I think about this back to like my days covering high schools and players, you know, a lot of the football recruits I covered in Mississippi were starting to specialize in football, but you still had the three sport athletes, the people who would, you know, have different seasons. They'd play football in the fall. They'd play basketball in the winter. They might do some AAU in the springtime, but then they'd go back to football. Like, Caleb Williams has been gearing towards being a professional football player and taking the steps to be locked in solely on that focus of his life since he was, you know, a prepubescent teen. That's just, it's crazy to think about how we've changed how you get to the NFL and just how early you have to really be locked in on that goal if you want to have a college career carry out the way Caleb's did and then get yourself in position to be the number one overall pick. And that's not just on the athlete. That's on the parents. That's on the, you know, the quote unquote team that you build around these guys to make that happen. And it really does take an effort that I just think it's hard to quantify because it's so rare that anybody has the resources and the ability to do that. That's why I like the Marvin Harrison Juniors of the world. I mean, that guy grew up in the NFL. Right. Like, there's a reason he was the fourth overall pick and was considered this, you know, generational talent at his own position the way that Caleb was, because of how many years were spent in getting these guys ready for their respective moments.
What's most important for Caleb in the coming weeks ahead of the start of camp later this summer?
Well, it's acclimating yourself. I know when he was asked after the draft, what's your goal for this year? And he listed off like four things. Know all of his teammates' names, know everybody in the building, know the playbook, and try to win games. I mean, those are some lofty goals because that's a lot. But I think the next couple weeks, and we're guilty of doing this when you get out and you see the roster start to come together when it's a full squad practice during OTAs. Who's rising up the depth chart? What do the rep counts look like? Like, none of that stuff matters. up until the point of training camp and when that starts. So I think for Caleb, it truly is all of those things, learning teammates' names, knowing that by the time you hit training camp, you know, you're going to be full go in all of this. And it's different than most rookie quarterbacks because he doesn't have to beat anybody out. Like last year in Carolina, Bryce Young ends up winning that job in June. And they're, you know, we're told from Frank Reich that he's QB1. But like there was that process of, are you ready for this moment? Are you going to be QB1? Are you going to be able to beat out, who was it, Andy Dalton, whoever the backup
that
was?
That is right, Andy Dalton, yes.
Yeah, like, I mean, he had all of those things to do. Caleb has that part expedited. Like, now it's, you know, walking into a really good situation also means that you get to bypass all of the other obstacles that a lot of quarterbacks have to encounter on the way to becoming the starter, like what J.J. McCarthy's going to have to do. Like, is he going to win that job right away, or is it going to be Sam Darnold until they feel J.J. McCarthy's ready to go in Minnesota? You know, Caleb can kind of, and I don't want to use the word slow play this, but he can go about it in a way where he doesn't have to rush any of the steps or skip any of the steps to get ready and get up to speed, because this place has been custom built for him. And that's custom tailored to his growth and going at his speed to make sure that there aren't any steps skipped the way that there has been with young quarterbacks here in the past.
Why did Ryan Poles believe he had the luxury to take a punter in the fourth round?
I love how this is such a big talking point. And it makes sense why people are looking at this a little sideways, wondering, okay, you had some other needs. Why did you go with punter? I think Yurko, for a lot of reasons, he felt, you know, you can believe people based on what their actions tell you more than what their words are. And if you take a punter in the fourth round, you think your team's closer than most people probably do to being in a position to win more games and contend. And I think they would have been in that position without the punter in the fourth round. But to get Torrey Taylor, somebody they say they think is a weapon, that doesn't exactly mean he's going to like be playing other positions for them. But special teams have been a weakness. I mean, at least like with the punter. Like, I mean, Trenton Gill's net average last year was at the bottom of the league. He kind of just devolved into being a really good holder. You don't spend a fourth round pick if you don't anticipate making a change at that position. But, you know, for this offense and this special teams unit, like areas last year where the defense had to carry a lot of the weight because of the field position gain that the Bears were not able to capitalize on, I think that kind of factors into why they made this decision and also how the board fell. Because anybody clamoring for them to have taken a defensive end in the fourth round when they were there at 122, where were they? Because the last defensive end that was taken was Jalix Hunt at 94 to Philly. So because of Braylon Trice going one pick before Karan Amegadije to the Falcons, that kind of alleviated their options. Could they have tried to trade back and go get Torrey Taylor there and then get like another pick and then also get Austin Booker potentially? But I think the way they played it was that in terms of what their board looked like and in terms of not reaching for a defensive lineman or just like taking a tackle that they felt might have been, you know, at least filled some need, but because they're trying to give Jervon Dexter and Zach Pickens the benefit of the doubt that year two will be better, I think for like their needs and what they wanted to come away with, that's just kind of like the way the economics of the draft worked for them within not having to reach for a position that wasn't there.
Okay. What about Keenan Allen and his future? Is it very much like, we want you here because of a young quarterback and a young wide receiver we have right now? We think we're going to be good. You will contribute. But even more importantly, we want to show this young offensive group like how to be a pro. I mean, is that it? Is it one and done for Keenan Allen, Courtney?
I don't think it's one and done, but you know, the longer we go without seeing the contract extension, and it wasn't that this thing was like ever like, okay, he gets here, he signs it immediately. We heard from him right away that he didn't think, like, he thought, yeah, like down the line, it wasn't like, okay, this is top order of business. It was absolutely not the same situation as Montez Sweat getting here last year and getting that deal done 4 days later. Keenan Allen's 32 years old. I think that there's other things that they are prioritizing too right now, like some other deals that might be more pressing to get done. I mean, what about Tevin Jenkins? I know it's a different position, but he's going into year four. If you want to pay him, you got to figure out what the injuries and what the price is. Like, that's probably taking precedence right now. There's a DJ Moore extension that's going to be due down the line.
Mm-hmm.
I think for Keenan Allen, like, you don't want to view it as a short-term rental. He's gone after 1 year. But in the worst-case scenario, if it goes according to plan this year, that's not a sunk cost. But I would imagine at some point, probably closer to the season, maybe they'll even let it play out this season. He doesn't have that many more years left to play. But if it goes well this year, I find that, like, really hard to believe that they just, like, let him go after that.
Okay. All right. Anything else we should know? I mean, what's next on the docket here? They're going to have some mini camps, obviously, coming up. The schedule comes out in a little over a week, so we all look forward to that. But it feels like the two of the biggest things that we were all juiced up for are now in the rear view with the draft and with free agency.
So schedule comes out on Thursday the 9th, and I would imagine I'll put the over-under at 5 primetime games. I think they're going to have this team playing a lot of late game windows, or rather, you know, the primetime windows. So probably 1 or 2 Monday night football games, the Sunday night football game, they'll play on a Thursday. Like, there's going to be a lot of Chicago Bears in front of a national audience. And then rookie camp starts the next day, and we'll get 2 days to see what it looks like. And I can remember my first time covering a Bears rookie camp 2 years ago. That was the most intense rookie camp I've ever covered. Most physical, most, like, fast-paced, like, you know, kind of a welcome to the NFL moment from right off the bat. It didn't feel like that exactly last year. I don't know if they kind of, like, eased up on any of that, but, you know, the ante is up now. It's going to be much harder to make this team as a younger player because of how many established vets they have already in the fold, guys that they've brought in, guys that they've developed through the draft, guys that they've traded for, free agents, whatever. Like, seeing how Caleb Williams starts to gel with the other pieces on this offense and some of the rookies that are going to be coming out of this rookie mini camp and into, you know, the 53-man roster eventually, like, it's exciting. It's exciting to watch the next step here for a team that's got a lot of eyeballs still on it to figure out how this thing's going to work.
I've heard I've heard that internally they feel like they are going to have no choice but to do Hard Knocks this year. I heard from someone outside the organization that the Bears will be getting Hard Knocks. Do you expect that to happen?
You know, if it happens, I don't know if divine intervention will have been part of this to convince George McCaskey that having Hard Knocks there is a good thing, and maybe that divine intervention is Kevin Warren's influence, but if there's any year for the team to get it, it would be this year. Yeah. But that's, I mean, God, you talk about, like, new-look Bears. If they're agreeing to do Hard Knocks, then maybe they don't even have a choice. Because I know if the league is able to come down and say, no, you're doing this because of the agreement they have with NFL Films and how, you know, the Bears have been eligible for this before and they've gotten the charter franchise exception given to them. But if it happens, you know, buckle up. That's when Hard Knocks comes in, like, and I've covered teams and been around teams with the Raiders that, you know, that's been a part of it. Like, when the cameras are there, you know, the Bears obviously have editorial control over what gets out, but it always just feels different when the team that you cover is on that show and you're watching moments that you typically would not get to see and getting an up-close look at a part of the process in the preseason that typically just goes by in Chicago unnoticed because we've never seen it broadcast on the camera with the cameras on Hard Knocks.
Courtney, great stuff. Thank you. We appreciate the time. We'll talk soon, all right?
Thanks, guys. Take care.
We'll see you. There's Courtney Cronin at Courtney R. Cronin on X, and read her later story that earlier this morning was on the front page of ESPN.com. She covers the Bears in the NFL for ESPN NFL Nation. And I mentioned that to you in the past. I think, like, I had heard that the league has sort of acquiesced, I guess you'd say, York, to the Bears' wishes in the past. Like, they don't want it. There were a few instances where the league thought about it, but they're like, okay, they're held in such high regard within the league office as the founding franchise. They've been like, okay, that this time, like, I heard the Bears even feel like this time they're basically going to be told, sorry,
you're doing it.
George, you don't want it, you're doing it. And, like, it's too juicy for them.
Get it out of the way.
Yes.
And that you don't have to do it for 30 years.
Yeah.
32 years.
Like, it's too juicy for the league, and it does make a lot of sense.
Juicy.
Well, Sylvie was talking about it yesterday. I mean, there are so many different stories.
You've been on this story, though.
I heard it 3 weeks ago for the first time.
Yeah. You've been on
this. And it was someone outside the organization, but very closely connected to
an extremely powerful entity within the NFL.
Somebody outside.
That believes the Bears will be getting it. And then I had heard that the Bears themselves
but with inside information
to feel like they're going to be told at some point here, you guys are doing Hard Knocks. We will see. I think Courtney's right. I think it's 5 primetime games. That'd be my guess. Maybe more.
I think it's more.
Boy, it's a
there
lot.
Are two
didn't
teams
we,
with six.
Were there
year.
Two? Was it, is that what we? I was just trying
two
to remember.
Teams with six.
It
we
up.
Didn't. We crunched there the numbers. We looked at it. Yes.
Boy, it's a lot.
It's a lot of late nights for us, Yerk.
Could be Christmas.
Yeah. Oh, I don't mind that.
Could be Christmas game.
You gotta bring in some more Portillo's.
I will. I like to change pace.
Yeah.
I don't like Sunday at noon. 2 years ago, that's all we had for the final 10 games of the 10-game losing streak.
Yeah.
Sunday at noon. With the announcers, like, you had to listen to these games, and it was painful on your ears.
I'm with you. I don't mind the change of pace. It allows like you to it. Watch other games
Thursdays,
on Sundays. Yeah.
Yeah, opens up some weekends.
Yeah, I agree.
It's very nice. It's very pleasant. Yes.
I think it'll be a lot. 312-332-3776 if you want to ring us up. I mean, 5 would constitute as a lot. Maybe Yerk was right. Maybe it's as high as 6. We'll find out a week from Thursday. It's Carmen and Yerk. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Carmen and Yerko. Follow the show on Twitter at Carmen DeFalco and at Yerko64. This is ESPN Chicago, Chicago's home for sports.
Yerko just told me there's already been a scratch at the Derby.
Yep. And Cena is out. Epic Ride is in.
Epic Ride is in. So there will be 20 horses. Though, right?
There will be 20 horses. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
Let's see. Let's grab some calls. Talking Bears and NFL. 312-332-3776 with Carmen and York. This is Darren in Iowa talking about the primetime matchups. Go ahead, Darren.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Say, the schedule is coming on next Thursday, I guess.
Yep.
But last night I was listening to Rich Eisen's podcast, and there was a guy on there that helps with the schedule. And as of right now, they are scheduling the Bears on a Sunday night or the Monday night game. And the Sunday night game would probably maybe be Texans at Houston or Monday night home against Detroit.
Are you talking about
that matchup?
Are you talking about week one, Darren?
Yes.
Week one.
Okay, so it would maybe be Sunday night. That's a sexy one with CJ Stroud against Caleb.
Sure.
I like that. And then what was the Monday game?
The Monday night game be the Detroit Lions home.
At home. Yeah, either one of those is good. Thanks, Darren.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you, bud.
Well, I like that already. Rich Eisen's podcast. That's where that information comes
from. Yeah, I didn't
see
that.
Who knew somebody listened to that?
Oh,
but good.
Please.
Good for him.
Stop it.
Yeah.
He's got a pretty popular podcast. I did not see any of that, but either one of those matchups would be great to kick off the season.
Do you mind if I just take my shots where they fall? Do you mind if I just take my shots? Well, he's got a pretty popular podcast, John. I don't care. I'm going to take my shots. Shooter got to shoot. Shooter's got to shoot, Carm. Did you hear that?
Yeah, but then you got to make him. I mean, he's got a lot. I think a lot of people listen to that podcast.
Dead on. Ball's accurate, all right? Dead on, ball's accurate.
You're on a roll today, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm surprised Carmen didn't dump me.
Too far. I think I had to, dude. I'm looking out for my partner.
Yeah, you're so sweet.
I mean, I'm just thinking about you.
Oh, is that what it is? Self-preservation.
Well, I don't want you to get... I don't want either one of us to get thrown off the air. Yeah.
Not for what I said there. Oh, no. Oh, no. There's no way in the world.
Better safe than sorry.
Because if, say, if the guy's name was Lewis, well, they're going to send Lewis packing. Nobody cares.
But his name's not Lewis.
I understand it wasn't Lewis. It was Fudge. But just because I'm witty and I'm smart and I'm intelligent doesn't mean if you substitute the name and it's fine. The guy's name happened to be Fudge.
Don't you know the old expression, when in doubt, leave it out?
When in doubt.
And I have like
pour some sugar on me.
I have like 3 seconds to make a decision. Yeah. I thought I was making the best decision
for the benefit
of the group.
Zetterman didn't text me, so we're good.
All right.
We're past being good.
Oh, well, then bring it back for the final word.
That's right.
I'm so, way ahead of you, brother.
I'm way ahead of you already.
I decided.
We're doing what's best for the show back here.
I decided.
We're keeping the creativity alive.
You finally got a couple of professionals in the producing you today.
Oh, man. I hope they're not in the car.
I decided to play it safe. But then there's always the final word, so you can bring it back for the final word, and I won't dump it. Jim is in the Ukrainian village. What's up, Jim?
All right. I know I called yesterday about the Iowa-Wisconsin thing, but I'm going to tell you about this punting thing and why it's important. All right. You ready? I'm going to give you actual numbers. Yeah. I'm going to give you real numbers.
Okay.
All right?
Yes.
Last year, the Bears were fourth worst in the NFL in expected field position after a punt,
yeah.
minus 2.75 yards. times five punt. That means every game the other team gained 15.5 extra yards on us that they didn't have to get with their offense because our punter gave it to them. If you take this Taylor guy and adjust him to the NFL, he's a plus eight. That means that they got to get 40 more yards every game that he didn't have to get, that our punter gave us, their right. offense had to earn. That's a net 57 yards. There's just no way this
is
a bad idea.
But, Jim, why can't you find – is he the only punter that's got a plus eight? Is that what you're saying? He's the only guy that can do that?
He would equate to the third best punter in the NFL. The guy from
so he's Oakland. Not even the best, and they spent the fourth round pick on him.
Oh no! It's hard. You can't say that for sure. If you just adjust what he did in college to the NFL last year, he would have been the third best.
Which team had the best in those numbers last year? Do you know?
Oakland.
How'd that work out for Oakland?
I don't know, but the other team had to get 298 yards less all year long than they needed to. So
who was second on that list? Do you know?
You know what? I do not know off the top of my head.
No, I'd sir. Love to see if it was playing. I mean, Jim, listen, and you present good numbers. I love numbers, Jimmy. I mean, you know me. Come on. That's good stuff. Find your punter anywhere. Cut Trenton Gill and go find someone who's better at it. It's as simple as that. Nobody's disputing the fact that the Bears struggled in that area last year. If you want to upgrade it, go upgrade it. Don't do it with a fourth-round draft selection.
Here's your dilemma.
Do you get what we're saying, people?
You're using raw numbers. Gill averaged 46.1 a punt. In college, your Taylor averaged 46.7, right? That's what it was in college. That's what he did. So they punted the ball the same distance.
He was using the expected metrics, which I do like.
It's fine.
I do like that, by the way.
Whose coverage unit was better?
I have no idea.
But that's what you've got to take into effect also.
I have no clue.
So with better coverage people, is Gill like the fourth best punter in the world? Or with the people they had covering punts last year, was that the problem? See, these numbers can be thrown out there, but you've got to know how to utilize these numbers. You're not going to tell me that this is what this means, and that's what this means, and this is what this means, and then there's a value per yard. No. No.
Go.
Sorry.
Can't you just go find a
punt? Bye-bye.
Can't you hold like a tryout?
Here's your problem. 135 positions got drafted after the Bears took the punter. If one of those guys turns into a stud, that's what you're going to say. Richard Dent got drafted in the eighth round. Okay?
Did somebody take a punter before him?
Somebody take a punter before him? No. The point is, there's going to be a guy that could have been found later on after the 122nd pick.
Yeah.
Okay? And you didn't give yourself a chance to find that guy because of your arrogance and your pompousness. You decided my team is so perfect, I have the luxury to grab a punter. That's what you decided.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems to me
that's an error in judgment. That's an error in judgment. And you're assuming 17, 85 punts this year. Am I going to go check and see how many punters actually had 85 punts last year? Do I need to go check that?
Go ahead. I hope they don't have to punt five times a game. I hope it's
less. I got
to
wonder if how bored I am to go check that number.
I hope it's less.
How bored am I, Carm?
I wonder how often kickers and punters spend, you know, what's the average lifespan on a team for a kicker and a punter now? That's the other thing. I just wonder. Like, it seems like the league has gotten pretty wise about turning them over rapidly. Or am I wrong on that? I don't follow it closely, so I might be wrong. But doesn't it seem that they...
I think kickers have longer longevity than punters.
You think so?
I believe that to be true.
I don't know.
Doesn't mean it is. I just feel that to be true.
I just feel like... I just feel like there's a more efficient... I don't even know if efficient's the right word. There's just a simpler way to do it where you can improve in that area, without spending draft capital.
Bryce Behringer... led the league in most punts.
That's a made-up name. That's not even a name.
And you want to guess what team he's on?
Bryce Behringer punts for the New York Jets.
Oh, that's close. You're in the same division, same ballpark.
So the Patriots.
Correct.
Yeah, so a team that stinks.
Horrible team.
The teams that stink punt 98, 99 times a year.
Yeah.
They do. They punt 99 and 98 times a year. I'm looking at it right now.
Arizona, they don't stink, 64 times. And isn't your theory, Carm, correct me if I'm wrong here, Swami, in the new version NFL, on fourth down, you're going for it?
Well, more teams do more and more. Okay. You know.
Teams certainly got to make the punter more important or less important.
Probably a little bit less.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So, Arizona Cardinals, 64 punts in 17 games, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not 5 punts a game, right? 5 punts a game is 85.
Yes.
That is not 5 punts a game. That's 4 punts a game. So, his numbers are already skewed.
The Bears, I'm assuming, get 5 punts a game?
His numbers have already been bastardized. Do you understand what I'm saying? The Bears punted how many times last year? 67.
67 times, so not 5 times.
So he's wrong again. Just one less than 4 times a game.
Right.
One less than 4 times. So his numbers already screwed up.
Yeah, that's one fewer than 4. Yeah.
Our wonderful caller with all the numbers. They're already screwed up.
I can't believe anybody put that much stock into looking at punting metrics.
Fourth round pick on something that happens not a third of the game, Carm.
No, stop it.
Four times a game.
I respect the hell out of Jim for like actually having the wherewithal to go through those numbers, though. I don't know how you do that. That's a tedious task. I mean, I'll give you EPA per play and success rate all day. That means something. Punting statistics, I can't. That's like, you got to be a real diehard football fan to be giving out punting statistics. For something that happens, you know, if you're good, you hope you're punting, what, 2-3 times a game, right? You're 2-3 times a game? We're talking about 3 a game. A third of the game. You got 70 plays on offense. What third of the game?
It's not a third of the game. We already
you probably hope you're punting about three times a game.
Yeah, 3 phases, Mike Easter, and of course the 4th phase. Which doesn't have much to do with football at all.
Holy cow, guys. I mean, guys. You can't really believe it, can you?
Some do.
It's a punter.
Yep. It's a punter, Carm.
We're in a bizarro world, right?
Oh, that's true. That is true. There's one team I'm looking at here only punts 3 times a game.
Well, that's what I'm guessing.
Miami Dolphins, 53.
Well, Miami makes sense.
The 49ers, 3 times a game.
That's what I'm, like a good team, you're probably punting three,
John Lynch
four
was thinking about taking
game.
One in the second round, a punter.
You're talking about 4 times a game.
Cornering the market on punters. Remember Todd Sauerkraut?
Of course.
Remember when he was here? Remember they drafted him?
Like, we must
that little
be
pompous
in
ass ran around this city like
world.
He owned it.
I don't know any other explanation for it. I really don't. I mean, it is beyond
the belief. Owned the punters. What is it in this city?
Sauerbrunn was a second rounder.
He was a second rounder.
God, they didn't move up.
Well, Sylvie joked that's why Waddle is so soured on the whole thing because he was there when they drafted Sauerbrunn. We'll be right back.
Working from home?
We're back in the office.
Don't miss a minute of Carmen and Yurko. Just ask your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
We're going to lunch rush it here. We got a bunch of calls. I cannot understand what's happening with this. You want to fix your punter? Fix your punter. Nobody says don't. The poor Trenton Gill struggled last year. Cut him and go get another one. Why are you spending a fourth round pick on one? That's our only point. I don't know. I cannot understand the conversation around this right now. It's mind-boggling.
I went to the University of Iowa, and he was great. We waved to the kids in the hospitals.
Deep diving.
And he punted the ball great.
Deep diving punting statistics.
Tell your story, Walken. Nobody cares.
If you're a good offense, you don't expect to punt a lot. You're probably punting on average over the course of a season, 3.5-4 times a game. Do you know the kind of variance involved when you're talking about 4 plays?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he could.
But he was so good. We loved him in Iowa.
You're talking about, again, you hope that it's only 3 occasions a game.
Yeah.
Do you know the kind of variance you're opening yourself up to there? To say he could be the best punter and he could still. Variance could dictate that it doesn't go exactly as he hoped or you hoped. I am like flabbergasted.
I don't know what to tell you.
Let's do the lunch rush. We'll grab some more calls coming up here. Sean is with us today. Sean Green is with us. Black and Abdallah are on assignment. You'll learn more about that later in the week. What's going on, Shawnee?
What's going on, boys? So, you know, the callers are kind of mixed both ways on the conversation right now. But we're going to keep the conversation Bears here. So with the draft completed, many across the NFL and the city have been celebrating, you know, the obvious upgrades that Ryan Poles has made across the board. So, you know, this obviously isn't a perfect team by any stretch. So what are the biggest needs for the team now, guys? Obviously, you know, maybe another piece on the O-line. You know, obviously you need another D lineman in there, another tackle or edge guy. But what is the biggest weakness on the team now, guys?
I'd say the only thing that still prevents this team from being on defense close to elite.
You like the linebackers?
Would be, I do, I'm fine with it.
How do you feel about the punter?
Stop it. In the scheme they play, I'm fine with linebackers. The only thing that might prevent them from being, let's say, like top five defense, top seven defense, might be the lack of a true pass rusher on the other side of Montez.
Pass rush, period.
Other than that, I think they're pretty damn good.
Pass rush, and we don't know what the hell's happening at center. You might have two bodies in there, but you don't know if you got the right two bodies. You only need one, but you've got two bodies.
I mean, I love it. They needed to upgrade the center, and, you know, like, they didn't draft one, but, hey, they needed to upgrade the punter, and they drafted one. Like, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
I think they'll be okay at center, York. They must like something about Bates.
Well, and they traded a fifth rounder for him, so theoretically they used the fifth rounder on their center.
That's true. That's a good point, I guess. So we'll and they did try to acquire him before. I think they like him, and hopefully he solidifies some things. Because if that comes together the right way, then their O line, I think, will be all right. All right, Sean, what else?
All right, so going to the Cubs now with the dramatic win last night. Pushed the Cubs to first in the Central. According to our guy Chris Kampka, the Cubs are 11-0 this season with their starters going at least 5-1-out innings. And that's a franchise record last night's win. 18 wins in April. So, guys, who has been your unsung hero so far to this season? And also, who in that bullpen needs to step up to kind of stabilize things later in ball games?
All of them. Oh. Even Neris walks a tightrope most of the time, right? You trust Leiter. I know he got the worst of it the other night in Boston, but I think you trust him more than anybody else. I'm not a couple.
I'm going to go with Morrell.
Well, he was talking about the bullpen, though.
No, he's talking about both. He asked two questions. Who's the player, and then who needs to step up in the bullpen? Who's the guy that's been the MVP up to this point, right?
Yeah.
And then who needs to step up in the bullpen? Two questions. Double-barreled. He wasn't there when John Sawatzky gave us the theory, you know. Double-barreled question, two of them. You answered the second one.
I'd say everybody in the bullpen other than Leiter. And then who's been the unsung?
Who's been the unsung hero, the guy that's kind of got it done? It would have been Suzuki if he was still healthy, but
Michael
he's not.
Bush? How about Imanaga? I guess that's not unsung. He's like he's awesome right now. Is that not an unsung hero?
Exceeding expectations, though. I mean, he got signed, and Jesse was telling us, you know, he's like a 3 or 4 middle of the rotation guy. He's been unbelievable.
Dude, he was dazzling Friday night in Boston. Like, dazzling.
I take a deep breath and just say that what does the league do to new guys that come out? What do?
They adjust.
So it's great to have that success. Let's just keep that in check as he moves forward. Because you'd have to think once he gets through there and everybody sees something, there's going to be some tough times ahead.
Yeah, so. It's only 5 starts. Yeah. It's true. It's a small sample.
He's been good.
But he has been, you talk about a revelation. I mean, I seem to remember, like Kevin said, there was, that's a nice little piece for them. That's you could slot him into the middle of your rotation. And maybe Yurko's right. Maybe this all changes as the league sees him more. But right now, he's not middle of the rotation. He's top of the rotation. Yep. He was dazzling, I'm telling you, on Friday in Boston. And he changes eye level so well.
And that's without...
He locates and he mixes.
It's without Justin Steele, too.
And it's without Justin Steele.
The 6th horse in this year's Kentucky Derby.
Just Steele. You're looking at a .98 ERA through 5 starts, Yerk, with a whopping .439 ERA plus. Of course, these numbers will come back down to earth a little bit. They have to. The most impressive thing might be the 9.33 strikeout to walk ratio, Yerk. He's got 28 Ks and 3 walks. That's what you love. And that you'd like to think is sustainable.
Yeah.
So
what about the hitters, Carm? What about the hitters?
I don't know if I can give you a good one. Michael Bush, I guess, would be the guy.
He's your guy?
Yeah, I think he'd probably be the guy. All right. How about, you know who else is pretty good? Was Mike Tauchman ever this good? Wasn't Mike Tauchman kind of like just a journeyman who was...
He's definitely better this year than last year,
shuffled around the league for the last decade or so, and like... Mike Talkman's got an OPS plus a 163. Hello!
Yeah, that's up there.
He hits the ball the other way. I mean,
he's doing a nice job there.
All right, what else, Sean?
All right, so with last night's playoff outcomes, obviously, around the association, Nuggets finishing off the Lakers, and the Wolves on Sunday doing their first playoff sweep in Wolves history. But this sets up a heavyweight battle in the West between Minnesota and Denver, guys. Like, so, you know, this is going to be obviously a 6 or 7 game series. So what's going to be the key for either side to take this one home?
Boy, can Ant continue to do what he did against Phoenix?
Is there a more fun player to watch right now?
Probably not.
He's so good.
Maybe, you know, maybe Luka. Not many. Not many. And if he can continue to stress the Nuggets defense and attack the rim and attack one of their few weaknesses, that's probably the difference. I don't know. I'd lean a little bit on Denver still. Championship medal and Joker and Murray are just clutch. I don't know how you define it, right? They say it's impossible to define. I guess it is, but sometimes you see it and you know what it is. And they certainly seem to be clutch. The moments are never too big for Joker and Murray, ever. It's calm. It's cool. We don't need timeouts.
Well, it'll be entertaining. We'll see if
it'll be great.
We'll see if it's as entertaining as the Lakers and Denver was.
Yeah.
We'll see if they have answers.
I think it'll be pretty good.
I know. It's a half-court game. It's a grind.
I like Denver in the series, but
Michael Porter Jr. is going to have to be key.
Yeah, man. If he continues to shoot the way he shot the ball from distance, good luck beating the Nuggets. If he's going to shoot 45% from three, or I don't even know, it might be higher than that in that series. Good luck to you if that's what Michael Porter Jr. is going to do.
This is not revisionist history here. Back in 2018, I was begging for the Bulls to draft Michael Porter Jr. They took Wendell Carter.
Good for you.
This jabroni that they shipped off.
Well, everybody was scared to death about his back, remember? Everybody was really scared.
Come on, modern medicine. We're in the new age.
What's he shooting from distance in the playoffs? I mean, granted, it was a small. Hold on.
Felt like he made every three he took. They got game one not until Saturday, by the way. They got to let some other series finish, it looks
Yes, that's right, Eric. So far in the playoffs, he's at 49%. Dude, good luck. Now, that probably won't continue, but if he shoots like that again, he's at 45% or something, they're going to be tough to beat. What else, Sean?
All right, so now we're going to go over to the Lakers now. Obviously, with their playoff loss, a lot of pressing questions on the front of LeBron, obviously head of coach Darvin Ham. Ham was uncensored in postgame, quoted saying, "Common sense tends to go out the window when you talk about my job in particular. Guys, are you in a lose-lose situation if you're coaching a LeBron-led team?"
Yes. The answer is yes.
Or if you're the general manager of a LeBron-led team.
I mean,
what's his name up there?
Rob Pelinka.
How many coaches have gone through this situation?
David Blatt?
The guy that came over from Israel?
I think Ty Lue is one likes the most. Frank Vogel. Who else? There's got to be
a lot of love for Vogel in Phoenix either.
No, I don't think so. I probably
especially
don't blame
for Bradley
him.
Beal.
I was going to say Brad Beal will tell number one fan.
Yeah, he blew him off, went right by him.
Boy,
smacked his hand away.
Some game by Brad Beal in a closeout game. Holy cow, stunk. This is life with LeBron. I mean, you take it because you're coaching LeBron, but there's a fine line. And he might be the sacrificial lamb, especially if LeBron wants to get back. All right, anything else in the lunch rush, boys?
We got one more.
Go ahead.
One more overnight signing. White Sox signed Jared Walsh to a minor league deal. I mean, Vaughn's been struggling 180 on the year.
Brutal.
What do you guys think about that one?
I mean, you know, Jared Walsh, interesting story. He's had some personal/medical things that have not gone his way the last couple of years. He really struggled after a good debut in Anaheim a bunch of years ago. I guess you take a shot. I've got it written down for Jesse. I mean, Andrew Vaughn's got an OPS plus of 40. Ugh. You know who was picked ahead of him in that draft?
Who?
Adley Rutschman and Bobby Witt Jr. I mean, not after, but I'm just saying, like.
Yeah, before him.
Aye, aye, aye.
Andrew Vaughn.
And Andrew Vaughn was sort of the consensus, like most of the teams I remember reading, like, this kid'll hit. He's a little limited in where he can play, or he's very limited in where he can play, but they were like, he's a hitter. He can hit. He's sort of Chris Bryant-ish-y. he's that much of a polished
Chris
college
Bryant
hitter.
Now, maybe.
Yeah, Chris Bryant now. 40 OPS plus.
That's terrible.
He's slugging 230, Yerk.
That's horrendous.
Ay-yi-yi.
Give me some more. What's his name? Pham?
Tommy Pham.
Tommy Pham. That's who I need. Give me some more Tommy Pham. That's what I want. That's the future awesome. For the White Sox is Tommy Pham.
Yeah, 30-something-year-old
This guy
Tommy
has come Pham. In. The minute he got in, it became electric over there.
All right, we'll take Tommy a quick break. Pham. We'll come back, grab more of your Bears calls. Jesse joins us at 2. We'll be right back.
Zoning out on that Zoom meeting? Zoom. Find out what Carmen and Yurko were talking about. Tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
Let's grab some Bears NFL calls ahead of Jesse Rogers. Will join us just after 2. It's Carmen and Yurk. Hope everyone's enjoying the beautiful day. Dave's in Indiana. Go ahead, Dave.
Hey, guys. Got a quick question. You guys do a great job, by the way, too.
Thank you.
But as far as this whole punter thing, just out of curiosity, what would you consider a successful fourth-round pick?
A starter.
What would you want to get out of a fourth round?
A starter, like Yurko always says.
They address in the fifth round. They address in the fifth round, but what you're looking for is somebody that could eventually become a starter.
Dave,
at a position to replace a player that's either going to want too much money.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you're looking for. You're looking for a guy that you might earmark as a corner that could eventually maybe take over for a more expensive player by year 4 of his rookie contract.
I'm on Ross St. Brown was a fourth round draft pick, Dave.
That's what I'm looking
like,
for.
That's what you're looking for.
I'm looking for Puka Nacua.
I get you.
I'm looking for Terrell Davis.
Now, if Torrey Taylor turns out to be a solid player, I ain't saying he's a star, but if he turns out to be a solid player, we'll hold down the position for I don't know.
But
six,
it doesn't. But he punts 3 times a game, Dave.
Okay, the 49ers, would you consider them a terrific organization, even though they haven't won the Super Bowl yet?
Yes.
Okay, they drafted their punter in the fourth round.
Good for them. Why do I care what
they
still what
only
any
punt
other,
3 times a game?
What any other team
but
does?
They
why
punt
right,
3 times a game?
But you're making it seem like it was that big of a mistake. And other
it's not a mistake. It's just stupid.
It's ridiculous.
It's dumb.
Period.
It's not a mistake. It's dumb.
Period. End of story.
What am I looking for in the fourth round? I'm looking for, Puka Nacua, who was drafted in the fifth round. I'm looking for, do you want me to find you?
Adam Timmerman.
Yeah, Adam Timmerman.
Adam played 12 years in the league.
I'm not looking for a punter.
Played on 2 Super Bowl teams.
I don't care about a guy that's going to have 3 plays
a
game.
Was a starter for 11 years. 11-year starter. That's what I'm looking for.
Come on.
I'm looking for Richard Dent. I'm looking for Mark Bortz, guys that played 12, 13 years in the league and started. That's what I'm looking for.
I care what John
I'm
Lynch
not
does.
Looking for a punter.
I don't know. Who cares what John Lynch does?
Can you even name the
no, of course
Niners punter?
Not.
Exactly.
Joe's in Naperville. Go ahead, Joe.
Carmen and Yurko, I respect you guys both immensely. Carmen, I hope you're there to witness my buddy Dave Zemke relinquish what was rightfully taken from him at the meatball eating competition in Wildwood Park. But anyways,
what happened? Was there a controversy last year?
Neither here nor there.
All right.
Devin Hester was drafted in the second round. Again, you're talking about he was drafted primarily as a kick returner.
No, they wanted him as a wide receiver, Joe.
They wanted him to be a wide receiver. Not as a wide receiver. It was as a quarterback.
Or as a defensive back, maybe, as a corner.
It was primarily to play Jerry Azuma.
But that was a happy accident. That was a happy accident, you know?
But still, it was 3 plays. You're talking about 3 plays. And on special teams, when you could change the field, when you could pin somebody within 5 yards, I think that's a play, a guy you take. I heard there's like 5 different types of kicking. Now, listen, I know. But there's like 5 different types of kicking, I guess, and this guy knows them all. And if this guy can put a ball in a back corner –
But Joe, you make it sound like he's the only guy that can do that. Do you think he's the only player on the planet that has that skill?
These rugby guys,
So then go find a rugby guy as an undrafted free agent. You just nailed it, Joe. Devin Hester, make no mistake, was drafted to be a starter at a position.
Yes.
Devin could never do that. And turned out to be probably the most electrifying returner ever.
Besides Travis Williams.
Okay.
Go ahead. The runner.
That was great. Make no mistake about it. Devin Hester was drafted with the idea that he would be a starting player. You should never be drafting players in the hopes that they are only going to play special teams.
Joe gave us a new one, though. We got a five-tool punter.
A five-tool punter.
Do you know that? We got a five-tool punter.
Who?
Five tools on our punter.
You should never.
I've got a five-tool punter. I'm making the T-shirts today.
You should never be drafting a player whose only hope is that they are a special teams player. That has to be explained to people.
You draft players to be starters. You want them eventually to be starters. You want them to be cheaper options than of some of the guys that you might have to pay that aren't necessarily elite at their position.
That they also play special teams matters.
Right.
That this has to be explained is truly remarkable.